17-18 CR State v. Anthony Leitner. We'll hear first from Jeffrey B. Olson, Attorney Olson, Assistant State Public Defender. Mr. Olson.
May it please the court and counsel, I'm Jeffrey Olson with the State Public Defender's Office. I represent Anthony Leitner. He's the defendant in the trial court in this case and the petitioner in this court. This case is relevant or topical for the high school students in the class because it deals with the scope and purpose of the Wisconsin Statute 973.015, which is the misdemeanor expungement statute.
Mr. Olson, you have a very soft voice.
Yes, I know.
I ask you to speak up.
Mary Burke and I were comparing notes before the hearing began, and we were both sort of soft-spoken, so I will try and keep my voice up. If you can't hear me, obviously, please tell me. I want to be heard. Mr. Leitner contends that the expungement statute in this at issue in this case is much broader than as interpreted by the Court of Appeals, that it affects and requires the expungement and prohibits the use of all official records of an expunged offense once the expungement has occurred. This is an important case to a relatively small group of people, and I say small because of the criteria specified in the expungement statute. And as the court knows, the expungement statute covers people who have been convicted only of misdemeanors. That's the first hurdle a person has to get over. Second, and I should say I think that it's limited to the misdemeanor in front of the court at that time of sentencing. The court can't try and reach back and re-expunge misdemeanors that have already occurred or that might occur in the future. It's the ones in front of the court at the time of sentencing when the expungement order is entered.
Mr. Wilson, I'd like to clarify a little bit the record in this case and maybe what you're just saying now. Was this defendant entitled to have the offenses from 1997 expunged? And the reason I ask you that question is that, as I understand it, on the offenses, each of the offenses from 1997, there was a suspension or revocation of the driver's license for a year.
They were driving offenses and there was a license loss, yes.
All right. And isn't the offense before us within that year? And wasn't there another offense of operating after suspension within that year?
Well, I guess the question then is whether the successful completion of that revocation was a condition of the expungement. The statute says that they have to successfully complete the sentence. And as a general rule, loss of license, loss of operating privileges is not part of the sentence in the case. It's a sort of collateral consequence. The analogy that I can think of off the top of my head is the Court of Appeals just recently decided that the automatic loss of license under Chapter 961 is not a minimum mandatory sentence covered by the presumptive minimum law because the revocation is not generally considered to be part of the sentence. The sentence is the jail time. I think it probably would extend to placing a person on probation, given that the statute, that subsection 2 of the statute deals specifically with probation and any fine that's ordered. But I don't think that my understanding is that the revocation itself or the loss of license wouldn't be part of the sentence such that the expungement couldn't occur until after the revocation.
So are you saying that if he didn't commit an offense while he was 30 days in jail, then he'd successfully completed the sentence? Is that your position?
Right. And if he had was ordered to pay a fine, and he paid the fine. That's correct. I would also point out that at no point has the state argued that he wasn't entitled to expunction. Everyone assumes that those were expunged. The DA at the sentencing hearing said, we acknowledge that these are expunged.
Let me ask this. If you look at the CCAP records, and you have referred to those in your brief.
Right.
If you look at those now, there is no reference at all to the 1997 offenses.
That's correct.
But there is a reference to a suspension relating to an offense on August 29th, 1998. And if you look in the records going back to 1997, I don't see anything that would give rise to a suspension. How was it that the license was suspended in 1998?
Where is the reference to the suspension in 1998?
It's CCAP. The offense is on, I think it's the 29th of August. The charge is September 1st. The conviction is on the 10th, excuse me, the 1st of October. How can there be a charge of operating after revocation if there's nothing before that gives rise to the revocation?
I think the answer is that the revocation is not part of the sentence. That was still out there. The Department of Transportation as far as the Department of Transportation was concerned, he was revoked because of a prior court order.
Well, what is your position on DOT records?
I think that DOT records would also be covered, that they couldn't...
Do you want the records of revocations destroyed or not?
I think once the revocation was over, at that point it would have to be destroyed.
Counsel, excuse me, go ahead.
The issue here is just how broad expungement goes to. And I was just thinking of some examples, and I just want to throw a couple out.
Sure.
Certainly, I came from a... Before I came to the Supreme Court, I was on a single judge court in a smaller county. And sometimes we get to see people frequently.
Sure.
Now, we have, so for example, we have an expungement of the record, but the judge knows of his or her own knowledge, but doesn't use that as a principal part, but had seen this person before and may have an off-cuff remark like, well, you know, you've been in this court before. Would you find that just that reference in sentencing or bringing in or allowing, let's say, in sentencing a victim of a prior incident that was expunged but wanted to appear at the hearing? So I think that in my just thinking about this, if you want something so broad, you're trying to say it's as though it never happened and nobody knew anything about it, and therefore it can never be used in any way. Is that pretty much what you're...
I think that logically that's correct.
I'm not going to say common sense, but from a legal standpoint, you're asking for this broad expungement or destruction of records in the police department, in the DA's office, in the DOT. Does that make... I mean, where do you find that in the statute?
Okay, I guess there are sort of a number of nested questions there. I'm just trying to think of where I want to start. Let me start with saying this. In this case, the facts in this case, the information came from the district attorney's file. And I focused on that in my brief, saying, look, the district attorney should not have brought that up. And that's just the very narrow factual situation of what happened in this case. Logically, I think what that means is that it shouldn't be brought up affirmatively against the defendant in a future criminal proceeding. And whether it comes from another witness, a newspaper account, the judge's recollection, I don't think they should be affirmatively, the information should be affirmatively used. Now, obviously, the judge is going to remember, as you say, in some of the small counties, the judge will remember people coming in over and over again. But we ask judges to set aside information they've heard all the time and not consider it. And that's sort of a legal fiction, but the law demands that in certain situations, and the courts do it. And that's what should happen here in the instance where a judge doesn't has some recollection. I also recognize that, as you mentioned, is counter to the general rule about trial judges, sentencing judges, getting as much information as possible about the defendant in front of them. And, however, as the court has said, as recently as State v. Williams, the breach of the plea case, that policy is not absolute. There can be exceptions to it. Oftentimes, there are constitutional exceptions. For instance, in Williams, where the defendant has a due process right to have the prosecutor not undermine the plea agreement. Other situations where perhaps, I think it's State v. Marsh, where there was an argument about using defendant's reading material from the Aryan Nation and things against him at sentencing, and how that may implicate the First Amendment rights of the defendant. There are restraints on that general rule about the judge having all kinds of information about the defendant to judge his character. This is a situation where the legislature, I believe, has created one. And they did that by creating 973.015. Now, you asked where I got that in the statute, and...
Well, that's court record. I mean, 973 says court record.
And as I argue in my brief, I don't think that's the case. I think it's broader. I think the statute is ambiguous. It is, as I argue, it's couched in passive, indirect language about a record being expunged. Nowhere does it say who does what expunging. Nowhere does the statute even say that the court must expunge its record. It says the record is expunged, the record be expunged.
Mr. Olson, when you were answering some questions earlier from Justice Prosser,
yes,
you indicated that in this particular case, the jail sentence was completed. There must have been payment of the fine, and therefore there should have been expungement. Given that, isn't this case moot? What remedy are you asking for your client at this point?
Well,
he's completed his sentence. He's paid his fine. What's the remedy?
The jail sentence and the fine were in the 97 case that was expunged. Mm-hmm. In this case, he was sent to prison.
Has he completed his term?
He's been paroled. I don't know that he's completed his term.
So what are you asking for?
We're asking for resentencing without consideration of the expunged conviction.
What was the date of sentencing?
It was in November, I believe, 19th of 1999.
And he got 15 months?
That's he got 15 months. He may be done. I don't know. If he's been revoked, then he would lose his street time and he would have more time than he owed DOC. I don't know, and the record doesn't say where he is in his sentence.
Counsel, what is the issue in the case? Is the issue in the case how we define the word record in 973.015, whether or not we keep it narrow to court records or it means expungement of other records? Is that the issue? Or is the issue that the court should be precluded from considering the underlying factual basis of an expunged record?
It's both. The second part because of the first part. If expungement of the record means all of these official documents reflecting the facts of the offense are expunged and either sealed or obliterated, I don't think, to be honest with you, it matters which. There can be no access to those facts. And if there's no access to them, then the court can't consider them as...
So you don't get to that second issue regarding underlying information if you lose on your interpretation on the first issue?
I guess not, because if all that's expunged is the court record, then what happened in this case was perfectly fine.
Well,
the DA appropriately informed the court from her file, which apparently included police reports, about the prior offense, and as long as the court didn't say, this is your second conviction, that sort of technical aspect, since the conviction has been expunged, the court could consider the facts.
In this case, 973.015 does not describe, of course, what it means to expunge and doesn't define expungement. The Supreme Court in 1997 issued an order, Supreme Court Rule 72.06, that dealt with the expungement of records. What, if any, moment should we be giving to our own Rule 7206, which makes it pretty clear that that rule deals only with court records and requires activity by the clerk of the court's office?
Well, I think the moment to give to that rule is less in the text of the rule than in what brought it about. And this was argued in both of our briefs, and in fact the Attorney General included the petition for the rule in its appendix. And as I argued in my brief, the committee, the court's own records management committee, said, you read this statute, both this statute and the juvenile expunction statute, and with respect to 973.015, it's not clear what records are covered. And the fact that the rule that was ultimately promulgated covers only court records is significant only because this court only has the ability to make rules about its own records. It can't tell the police what to do with their records. It can't tell the DA what to do with their records. Those are governed by the legislature. So the fact that your rule covers only the court doesn't mean that 973.015 covers only the court. The fact that there was a need for a rule because of the ambiguity in the statute supports my argument that we don't know the reach of 973.015. It's not clear what record means.
Isn't there inconsistency in what you're saying? You're saying a court rule from this court can only deal with court records, but an individual judge's decision could affect the DOT and the police department and the district attorney's office? And
The individual judge's decision in expunging an offense, that's because he's doing it under a statute that says the record is expunged. It's not the judge exercising some inherent power to expunge a record, because it's clear from the precedent of this court that there is no inherent power to expunge records.
Well, where do you stop on these records that are expunged?
The records of the offense, the records created by the arresting officer, the jailer, if there was a sentence to jail, the court record of any proceedings, the Department of Corrections file with respect to probation for that offense, if the person was put on probation. I don't think that we're talking about vast...
Would you want all state agencies to expunge the record?
Those that had a record relating to the offense, and it's going to be a discrete set. Most of these won't involve any state agencies. Most will involve local law enforcement.
What about the state public defender? What is your policy on expungement of record?
That's a good question, and I don't know the answer to. I don't know. I assume we also, as attorneys for the defendant, have other record retention rules, and because the client has a right to their file. And we also, of course, are protected by the attorney-client privilege. I assume that to the extent of the expungement would affect our records, we would either have to seal them or, if the defendant requested, I guess we could turn them over to the defendant.
Well, the Attorney General's opinion, if memory serves me correctly, says that sealing records isn't adequate. That
right.
Common sense expungement means
obliterate.
Obliterate.
Right. And that's what State v. Anderson relied on, the Court of Appeals.
Well, but you've talked about sealing several times. Which is it?
I think that, from my point of view, I don't think that expungement has to mean destruction. I think I want to take a sort of functional approach to what expungement means, and either sealing or obliteration would achieve that, as long as it's not used again.
Your definition of expungement is it can't be used in court again.
I'm sorry, I didn't understand.
It cannot be used in court.
Right.
And the SCR talks about sealing records.
The SCR talks about sealing records.
Until destruction under the rules that relate to
record retention. Right.
Okay. You say you want all of the records sealed or destroyed. What about the records of people, that is, their mental records? So suppose that someone remembered well his first offense, maybe a victim of a first offense, and wants to have a statement on sentencing in the second or third offense. Would that be available for the judge to consider? I'm looking at the second part of your second issue, unrelated to the first one.
Again, this information about an expunged offense could filter into a sentencing proceeding in any
way. Can it or can it not?
I'm sorry?
Did you say it can?
It could. It has the potential of filtering in any number of ways.
You can allow it?
And at that point, what the sentencing judge would have to do is saying, I can't consider that. It's an expunged offense, and I can't consider
it. And that's one of the issues in this case, the facts underlying the initial offense versus the fact of conviction in the original offense. Now, the judge in sentencing is supposed to consider everything, and both parties have an obligation to make revelation, right? And the judge can consider an arrest, even if there's no conviction, right?
Right.
And the judge can consider an acquittal, an offense of which the defendant has been acquitted.
Correct.
Right? In making the sentence determination. Does it make any sense to you that if you can consider all of that, consider everything in a pre-sentence investigation report, even though there's hearsay, it's not verified, that you can't consider the underlying facts of an expunged record?
I agree that a conviction, either after a jury trial or after a guilty plea that's been expunged, is more reliable than something that was dismissed or that was never brought or for which the person was acquitted. However, again, we get back to what the legislature wanted to achieve here, and to give younger offenders a fresh start by wiping this off the record in a very limited set of circumstances for very minor offenses. And I think when an expungement determination is made, implicit in that, I think, is that the judge who granted the expungement has said this offense is not very predictive of future reoffense. And that's one reason why it won't harm society to expunge this record.
Does that make sense in light of the repeated offense? I mean, the whole idea of expungement is that you have a clean record, and then nothing, it's as though nothing ever happened. But I'm just talking about what you're saying is that that's the basis for it, which you understand. Here is a person that has done something in addition to that.
In this case, Mr. Leitner, yes. And, of course, no judgment is going to be perfect. And sometimes a sentencing judge will give an expungement and the person will reoffend. And obviously the legislature would think that this isn't going to be perfect either. There are going to be cases where people reoffend. It's a question of what the balance is. And if helping younger offenders become productive members of society by erasing the stigma of the first offense or the prior offense benefits society to a greater degree than society is hurt by having people reoffend, then it's worthwhile.
Mr. Olson, there have been several discussions at the Judicial Council over the last couple of years about the meaning of this particular statute and whether or not it requires CCAP to eliminate reference to convictions that have been expunged from the computer records. You have a position on that? What's your interpretation of the statute in regard to relation to CCAP records?
Well, I think actually mine, that's now covered, as I understand it, by the Supreme Court rule, which refers to computer records.
7206.
Right, 7206.
So what do you think that means? Do we have to clear out the computer records completely?
I think so, yes. And certainly no public access to that. Like, when I go onto the internet and look at CCAP from my computer, there's no, I shouldn't be able to get any information about that offense.
Are you able to do so?
No, it's not on there now.
Before you sit down, counsel, I do need to come back to the issue of mootness. And I understand we're here on a legal issue or a set of legal issues, but as to your client, he would have completed the 15-month sentence even if he had served every single day of the sentence by mid-February of 2001, which was several months before the Court of Appeals issued its decision.
So even the Court of Appeals decision was...
Well, I'm asking this question because I want to know whether your client really wants to be resentenced. Does he really want to go back to court and be resentenced, or is the remedy here moot? Do you really want that remedy for your client?
Well,
that's what you asked for.
What I want for my client and what my client wants aren't necessarily the same. But
well, you're here doing a service to the law, and I understand that. But as far as your client is concerned, is he really asking for resentencing, or is whatever we say on the merits of the legal issues here moot as to him because he has long since served his time?
Well, it may be moot as to this sentence. I would also point out he got 15 months out of 18. So we're talking about 3 months, potentially, that he could, if he was resentenced, he would face 3 months.
Well, he can't be sentenced to more.
Right, he couldn't be resentenced to more anyway, unless there was new information, perhaps. But in any event, this is why the case is moot. We now have a pre-sentence investigation in his correctional file that lists these expunged offenses with no reference whatsoever to the fact that they're expunged. It lists them as simply prior offenses. And that PSI will stay with DOC for a long time. If he commits an offense in the future, it will show up possibly in another PSI. It will show up in future correctional programming decisions that could be made. And that's why this is still, in that sense, a live issue.
Okay, so you are actually asking for a proper expungement.
Right. And if
I'm
right about
the statute as you do, obliterating all of these records,
right,
but not necessarily resentencing?
Not necessarily. If he can't be resentenced, then obviously...
Well, he can be, but I'm asking, does he really want to go back to court for this?
Yeah, as I said, that's the remedy we've been asking for. For consistency's sake, that's what I asked for in my brief. Realistically, is it going to make a difference? No.
I mean, he's picked up another driving offense in the meantime, hasn't he?
Correct. According to CCAP, yes.
Thank you, counsel.
Assistant Attorney General Mary Burke representing the state of Wisconsin.
May it please the court, I'm Assistant Attorney General Mary Burke. With me at counsel table is co-counsel, Assistant Attorney General Shanette Campbell. Together we represent the state of Wisconsin in this matter. The state asks the court to find three things today. First, that the expungement procedure provided in Section 973.015 applies only to court records. Second, that the proper process for expunging court records as provided in Section 973.015 is the procedure currently set forth in SCR 72.06. And third, a trial court imposing sentence in a subsequent case may consider the factual circumstances underlying a previous offense for which the conviction has been expunged under 973.015, although, as the state has conceded all along, not the fact of the prior conviction itself.
Counsel, with regard to the statement of issues, is issue number three about whether or not the trial court in imposing sentence may consider the factual circumstances, is that a separate and distinct issue, or does that number three only answer, need be answered if you have to answer one of the other questions, yes, so to speak? Is my question clear? Do you want me to restate?
I think I'll try. Let me know if I answer.
It didn't end up quite the way that I intended.
I think I got it. I believe that the answer to three is contingent to the answer to one and two, because if expungement of the record means wiping out all information whatsoever, then there is no underlying information left.
And indeed, that's what your opposing counsel said in response to my question. But I don't think that's how this argument developed. That's why I asked you. And it didn't develop that way in response to one of the chief's questions. Let's say there's no record. There's just the victim of a prior offense who wants to come and testify. I think that crystallizes the issue of whether or not the court can consider underlying factual circumstances of an expunged record. And I think that probably that issue number three is an independent issue, not contingent upon the answers to one or two. Can you respond to that, please?
Well, it points up the difficulty with Mr. Leitner's position on the case, because we all recognize you can never wipe out every memory of every human being who might have had some contact with the case. So where do you draw the line between something that is identifiable, court records, paper and electronic, those are relatively identifiable, and the other extreme, people's memories, and how can those ever even be cataloged, much less erased. In between, there's quite a range of documents, and the state's position is that the statute doesn't apply to that intermediate range of documents either, and those would be things like prosecutor records, law enforcement records, as was pointed out this morning, Department of Transportation records. But even those records aren't quite so clear-cut. Now, with law enforcement records, we may have a prosecution in Dane County that involved law enforcement investigations from Columbia County. Now, if the records are to be expunged pursuant to the statute, how do we get the information passed along the chain to every public agency that's had some contact with the case, however minimal, however early in the process, so that they would know to expunge their records?
Let me ask this question. Regardless of the breadth of 973.015, may a court at sentencing consider the underlying factual circumstances of an expunged conviction?
Yes. Even the statute itself in no way hints that a subsequent court should be barred from considering the underlying circumstances. That issue arises only because of the way Mr. Leitner is defining record for purposes of this case. But for that, it wouldn't be an issue at all.
In my experience, when these motions for expungement under 973.015 are made, the state usually doesn't take a position. You know, the defense will make a motion for expungement. The state will say, up to you, judge. State doesn't have a position. I suspect if expungement were understood to mean destruction of DA files, destruction of police records, destruction of DOT records, you know, and on, the state would have a rather different position at the trial court level when an expungement motion is made.
That's absolutely true. And in addition to what you have observed with the state not taking a position, expungement pursuant to this statute is oftentimes a subject of plea negotiation, that the state won't take a position or that the state would join in a recommendation for expungement. And also, it's something that we're being, that's being used now more creatively in types of dispositions where it's hard to craft the right or to know what the right disposition is. For example, Dane County has had a statutory rape pilot project involving teenagers. And oftentimes that will involve some kind of diversion program. The teenager behaves, nothing further occurs. Then expungement is allowed to occur to let that teenager go forward in life without a conviction on his own record. So you're right. I mean, there are huge practical consequences of affording Mr. Leitner the relief that he wants. In this court, in its first decision on this issue, the Breyer versus EC decision recognized some of those consequences for law enforcement in investigation, in officer safety, in formulating charging recommendations, sentencing recommendations, disposition, and sentencing. Were this information not to be available, that would really hamper both law enforcement efforts and the body of information that's available to a sentencing court ultimately in a case down the road. And frankly, the present case is a perfect example of that because of Mr. Leitner's escalating trend of similar offenses involving drinking and driving.
What about if an employer seeks these records?
Seeks them or sees them?
Seeks them.
Well, this statute can't be viewed in isolation. The Wisconsin Fair Employment Act also imposes pretty strict limitations on what an employer can do with conviction records.
This is not, well, this is a conviction, but it's an expunged conviction.
Right. So if the potential employer ran a CCAP search, he or she wouldn't find anything.
Right.
It's not there. With a couple exceptions that aren't relevant here having to do with employment as a private investigator, the Fair Employment Act bars, prohibits discrimination on the basis of conviction record unless it's substantially related to the nature of the job itself or there's an issue of findability.
And suppose he's seeking a bus driver's license and employment.
Well, the case law that interprets the Fair Employment Act directs an examination of the circumstances of the individual case, the job that's at issue, and the conduct that's at issue.
The mere fact that it was expunged doesn't necessarily mean it can't be reached.
Well, it's
in
expunged.
The DA stands.
I suppose it would depend on how the information came to the attention of the potential employer, but expunged conviction exists no more. And so,
as a conviction, the record is still there.
The
record
line.
In the DA's office, the record in the AG's office, it's times.
Right. But as a practical matter, I don't know how those records would come to the attention of a potential employer. And so that's the safeguard that the Fair Employment Act provides to the person with the expunged conviction.
Could I ask you, what records, in your view, are covered here?
CCAN.
Mm-hmm.
But what physically is covered?
My understanding is that it would be the court file, and that there may be different kinds of court files. There are court minute files. There are court case files. And as I understand the procedure that was developed by this court in the Supreme Court rule, papers in the case file are physically extracted. They're sealed. They're stored in another separate location. The docketing system is redacted with all personal identifying information. I think the only electronic information that has to remain available are some kinds of financial information, because otherwise there would be a violation of general accounting principles. But again, personally identifying information has to be removed.
Would that be because the court has its supervisory control over that particular portion? I was just trying to imagine, we've gone through the examples of if you have expungement so broad, how would you check up on the DOT? Just thinking about the enormous, where the Jefferson County District Attorney's Office, which had gotten information from the Dane County District Attorney's Office, and I think it would be very difficult. So I'm just trying to imagine why that would be. Why is it's just limited to court files?
I think the Supreme Court rule was limited to court files because that rule was issued under this court's superintending authority. But as to the statute itself, there are a number of practical reasons why it would have been limited only to court files, related to the nature of a conviction and attempting to provide some relief for a young offender from, quote unquote, some of the consequences of a criminal conviction, which is the language used in Anderson, the Court of Appeals case that Mr. Leitner relies upon. As a practical matter, you know, again, how we would ever identify everyone who had such information and be able to erase it seems like an impossible task, and we assume that the legislature acts practically and with common sense, and it would be a violation of that tenet of statutory construction to assume that the legislature would enact such an impossible statute.
Where else in the statute book is the word, and I didn't check this, I didn't either checked, where is the word expunged used? Is the only expungement statute?
Your Honor, I believe there are two other statutes. One of them would be Section 16584, Sub 1, and that is the Department of Justice statute, and in particular the Department's record-keeping provisions. And there's a very limited expungement provision in that statute that relates to fingerprints. A person who's arrested, taken into custody, and then subsequently released without charge or cleared through court proceedings, can apply to the department to have his or her fingerprints removed from the department's fingerprint registry. So that's
that the one that goes to the FBI?
As I understand it, local law enforcement agencies are obligated to provide fingerprints to the Department of Justice, which maintains fingerprint files. And so to maintain the accuracy of those files, if a charge is dismissed or the person is vindicated, their fingerprints can be removed. But that's a very specific provision.
I'm asking whether or not you remove them from the FBI.
I don't know the answer. Okay.
All right. What's the other statute?
The other one is 938.355. Yes. And the subsection is 4M. And this is a relatively new provision. It was created in the juvenile justice reform legislation of the mid-1990s. And this statute also applies to young people. A juvenile who has been adjudicated delinquent at age 17 can apply to the court to expunge the record of the adjudication, is the language of that statute. And then there are some standards for when expungement should be allowed.
That statute specifically says that the court may expunge the court's record. Wasn't it contain that specific modifier,
yes,
unlike the general one that works?
That's right. The court's record of the juvenile's adjudication.
Well, that doesn't really help us.
Well, I think something that's worth noting is that records are treated somewhat differently in the juvenile code than they are in the criminal code. For example, section 938.396 specifically distinguishes in the juvenile code between court records and law enforcement records. That's not a distinction that's drawn in the criminal code, and it arises from the unique confidentiality aspects of dealing with juveniles.
Do you have a position on the questions that Justice Prosser was raising early in Mr. Olson's argument on the license revocation as a part of the sentence and whether or not that must be, quote unquote, successfully completed in order for expungement to take effect?
I do agree with him, and the reason is the statutory language of 973.015 sub 2, which articulates what is meant by successful completion of the sentence. And that says, a person has successfully completed the sentence if the person has not been convicted of a subsequent offense. Okay, so that's one criteria. And then qualifier, if on probation, the probation has not been revoked and the probationer has satisfied the conditions of probation. So I don't see anything in there that relates to collateral consequences such as revocation of moving records.
Has not been convicted of a subsequent offense when?
I would read this to apply as of the time the certificate of satisfaction is provided to the clerk of circuit court pursuant to the expungement.
Within that year. Is there a year period in there?
However long the disposition that's involved in the expungement would run.
Do we know that a certificate of discharge was issued in this case to effectuate the expungement?
There's a factual problem.
Actually didn't occur in this case, it occurred in the previous case.
That's what I meant, in the previous case.
Right. We don't have the record of the previous case in this case. And in other regards, we don't have as much information in this case as we might want to have, because when the issue first arose at sentencing, defense counsel didn't object to consideration of underlying facts. The objection was to consideration of the conviction, and the prosecutor concurred in that analysis. So if defense counsel had said at sentencing, wait, you can't consider anything about this at all, we need to find out more about this case, it might have led to a fuller development of the record.
It looks like the state agreed that this record had been expunged.
The state doesn't contest that.
So we're here that both the defendant and the state agree that the record was expunged, and that the only issue before us is, can you use it in this second offense?
Well,
Burke, what is your position in regard to the mootness issue?
Is that what the position of the state is?
Yes, but what does record mean? How much is left, if anything, of the prior conviction? And it's the state's position, everything's left except the court record.
Everything's left, but what?
Except for the court record, which has been expunged. We concur in that. But there's other information available. And Justice Crook's mootness?
I was just asking if you had any position on the question of mootness.
Mm-hmm. The case is fully briefed. Mr. Leitner timely brought his post-conviction proceedings. To some extent, this may be an issue that would have some tendency to evade review otherwise because of the short time frames of the sentences.
So even if it is moot, you'd like us to go ahead and make a decision?
The state didn't object in either the Court of Appeals or in its Supreme Court here to Mr. Leitner's waiver at the outset at the sentencing hearing of this issue in its belief that this is an issue that deserves appellate resolution.
Could I ask you, when is it that the notice should go to the court that the sentence has been successfully completed? In this case, we have a hit-and-run misdemeanor and an OWI causing injury in 1997. There's a 30-day jail sentence. And there's a fine. There are two fines of almost $1,000. It's totaling almost $1,000. There's 1 year revocation of license, and there's AODA assessment. Now, when, and among those things, should the notice go for expungement?
I would think that it would be at the time that Mr. Leitner satisfied that part of the disposition that constituted the sentence, which would be the jail time and the payment of the fine.
Does that make any sense? I mean, it's pretty hard to commit another offense while you're in jail. I mean, there's no sense probation there at all.
Mm-hmm. I wish that were true, but, drug offenses, battery of inmate, battery of jailer, escape, those are all offenses that might be committed inside an institution by someone with anger management problems, and there's some suggestion that that might have been Mr. Leitner's personality type, at least at that point in time. But the statute applies to all misdemeanors. In this particular case, Mr. Leitner got a relatively short jail sentence on his expunged case, but he could have gotten up to a year, or he could have gotten probation. So while the circumstances of this case provide for a relatively short period of time before the certificate of discharge would be issued, that's not necessarily the case in all misdemeanors to which the expungement statute would potentially apply.
You argue, counsel, that the language is clear and unambiguous, that record means court record. Yet we have our record, as you note in your brief, our records management committee, those illustrious judges and clerks that serve on that committee that say, it's not clear to us, I'm paraphrasing, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's not clear to us the scope or the breadth of what is meant, but we can't handle those other things, this we can handle. So that position of the Records Management Committee, that it's the language is unclear, doesn't alter your position that the language is clear and unambiguous?
No, the standard for whether statutory language is unambiguous is whether relatively well-informed people could disagree about its meaning. And while I don't intend to slight the Records Management Committee, I don't know who's on it or how experienced they are with even that entry level of statutory construction.
I thought the issue before that committee was the mechanics of expungement as opposed to what the meaning of the phrase record in the statute means. Is that not right?
The mechanics were the subject of the order eventually issued by this court, and also according to the tapes of the hearing on the petition and the court's conference also was the subject of this court's discussions. The petition of the Records Management Committee for an order does note also a request for information about the content of the record, and the petition itself is included in the appendix to the state's brief starting at appendix 108. But I would agree with you that the primary thrust of the committee's concern seems to be procedures, especially because their petition also included that newer expungement provision that was created with the Juvenile Justice Code in the 90s, where there, as you pointed out previously, the language is court records, and the same concern of procedure arose in that context also.
Just as a follow-up, the petition by the Records Management Committee with regard to 973015 and its reported lack of clarity as to scope of the term record says, referring to that statute, Appendix 108, similarly, it is not defined in the statute. What is meant by the court records of the adjudication to be expunged? There is no indication whether only the court record of criminal conviction or all such records, prosecutors, law enforcement, CID, posting, DOJ, DOC, are to be expunged. That's what I'm referring to.
Yes. Yeah. No, I would acknowledge that language is in the petition. But ironically, it was the same trial court judge involved in this case who had been involved in the Anderson case, Judge Mulroy from La Crosse, and in Anderson, which involved a different issue, really whether an expunged conviction could be used for credibility purposes at trial under the rules of evidence. In passing, Judge Mulroy, in ruling on that issue in the trial court, seems to have said, and in fact, if the state had followed the rule to the letter, the prosecutor's files would have been destroyed. That language is picked up without context then in the Anderson brief, where the Court of Appeals commented along the lines of, and were also persuaded by Judge Mulroy's comments, which were lengthier than that, but that piece of dicta was picked up in the Anderson decision. So then when this case, which also involved Judge Mulroy, came back before Judge Mulroy on the post-conviction motion hearing, even Judge Mulroy, who had been the source of that prior language, said, oh no, very clear, court record only.
What do we do about this problem here? Let's say we say it's only court record, but what if the Department of Corrections and their records indicate this, as is the case here, and decisions regarding placement, decisions regarding availability for programs, and many other decisions by the Department of Corrections are made on the basis of this conviction that appears in their records, which is expunged. What are we to do about that, if anything?
Well, as to Mr. Leitner's future history in the correctional system, should there be any, it's my understanding that the sentencing transcript also accompanies the case file into the correctional system. So in this case, the Department of Corrections or the county jailer would have had not only the PSI, but also the sentencing transcript where this discussion of expunction had occurred.
If I may, to focus more, I guess I'm concerned. The idea I've always had behind expungement is to give someone a clean shot, wipe the slate clear, don't carry this baggage with you. That's the intent of the legislature, and yet the DOC can be carrying the baggage even if it's expunged.
Well, there's other protections in the system, too, not the least of which was Mr. Leitner's counsel who raised this issue at the sentencing hearing. The process worked the way it's supposed to work here. The PSI was produced. Counsel reviewed it with his client. They noted this problem. Counsel raised it at the sentencing hearing, and the judge addressed it. The prosecutor provided supplemental information.
But so, that defense is gone if you should prevail. I mean, the lawyer isn't going to raise it again because it's a loser. And the Department of Corrections can look at the expunged record because this decision, if it goes your way, says only the court record is expunged. So what you have is somebody coming into the corrections system with two offenses instead of one. And that can be used, and it could be used for him too. It could show that he's got an alcohol or drug abuse problem, and therefore he needs certain programs. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's a...
Well, as it should, frankly, if the correctional system is serving its purpose, which is to rehabilitate and foster developing inmates into productive systems. And quite frankly, there's narrative information in the PSI report that describes some of the underlying circumstances of those expunged convictions. So even if the fact of the convictions themselves were deleted from the PSI, that underlying information about the facts would still exist, and it's that underlying information that really is relevant to the correctional system going forward for purposes of crafting appropriate rehabilitative programs.
Well, suppose the correction system says, look, we don't have a lot of drug treatment here, right? They don't. And only the first offender is going to get into the drug treatment program. And you're a second offender. Even though it was expunged, you're a second offender. You don't get in. Is that fair? Is that what the legislature intended?
Well, I can't speak to the requirements of any particular...
Right, I understand that.
...program, and frankly...
But maybe that the judge says, well, you know, I think first offenders with your age, et cetera, ought to only get probation. But you are, as a result of the facts I've just learned about the expunged record, you're really a second offender. Maybe not technically under the law, but you are. And if maybe I have a sentencing grid, mm-hmm. right? And the sentencing grid would show second offense, you should get more.
Well, that's what happened in this case, and it's
Pardon
the appropriate,
me?
That's what happened in this case
right.
as a practical matter, and it's the appropriate result because...
That's what I'm asking you.
Excuse me?
That's what I'm asking you. That's appropriate.
May I explain why?
Yes, of course.
Because the sentencing judge has a responsibility to obtain as much information as possible that is relevant to the character of the offender and protection of the public safety. And in sentencing Mr. Leitner, it is relevant that he had this prior incident that involved a hit and run while he was drinking. Not as serious as the one involved in the present case, but this is a pattern. Part of that pattern also is Mr. Leitner's lack of remorse and unwillingness to accept responsibility. So those facts, as well as any other hit-and-run incidents that he might have had that never resulted in any kind of prosecution, all are relevant to those two key sentencing provisions. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Burke. Mr. Olson, you have a few moments in rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you. I want to just follow up with something the Attorney General was just talking about the other information that the judge used in this case to justify its sentence of Mr. Leitner. That is, that's important because I know the court is concerned about hampering information or hampering the trial judge by restricting information. A single expunged conviction, or actually there were two convictions that occurred at the same time in this case that were expunged, doesn't tie the judge's hands. It's not the only piece of information a sentencing judge will have in front of him or her to make a decision about an offender's character. There are all these other factors that enter in, the defendant's age, their schooling, their employment history, their community ties, their military service. All of those things also go to making an assessment of the defendant's character. None of that is affected by this, by the expungement statute, or by the expungement of a single earlier conviction.
But prior criminal conduct on that point, counsel, is one of the most probative issues at sentencing, whether or not it resulted in a conviction and whether or not that conviction was expunged.
It is very probative, but again, you're dealing with very minor offenses here. And again, I think the policy behind this is that these more minor offenses are less probative of future risk for reoffense. And in fact, even the critics of the expungement statutes that are cited in the state's brief, they're sort of railing against very broad expungement statutes that allow expungement of all kinds of offenses, from very minor offenses to very serious felonies. And they say in their articles that expungement of a minor isolated offense is much less of a problem because those are not as probative or predictive of future reoffense. And that's what this statute is crafted to cover, the very minor misdemeanor offenses. I just want to follow up on questions Justice Prosser was asking about satisfaction of the sentence. And I think your concern is that there will be all these various conditions that aren't technically covered by the sentence that the person may or may not complete, and the judge may never know one way or the other. And I think one way to deal with that for the trial judge is to place the person on probation. There are a number of conditions that could be placed on the person as probation, and the person cannot get expunction or expungement until their probation is satisfactorily completed, and that's explicitly in the statute.
Could I ask you, what is the most telling piece of evidence the legislature intended the result that you argue for?
I think the most telling piece of evidence is the breadth, or the general use record, which under either the Black's Law Dictionary or the ordinary definition of dictionary definition is very broad, and its link, its passage in the same budget act that created the Youthful Offenders Act, which was discussed in great deal in Anderson, I want to mention Anderson as well. I think Anderson is very telling here because of what happened in that case. Mr. Anderson had been convicted after a jury trial, and between trial and sentencing, his attorney went and looked in the DA's file, because they had open file discovery, to get some additional information for sentencing. It was then that the defense attorney discovered the information about the witness's expunged conviction. And it was in that context that Judge Mulroy said, if you had been following this, Mr. D.A., your record would have been expunged, too. And, in fact, I believe my recollection of the state's brief in that, in Anderson, admitted that that was, in fact, the case, that it shouldn't be read to cover only court records in the state's brief in Anderson said if only the court's own record were expunged, the statute intent would be thwarted. Police records recording the conviction would remain and be open to the public. No purpose would be served. Expungement clearly means more than is indicated, and that's right after discussing this court's decision in EC.
What if I said to you, Mr. Olson, that the legislature had pending before it 73-75, that whole period, specific bills to expunge arrest records, and that they weren't passed?
Maybe because they didn't need to be passed, because 973-015 covered the situation. One last thing. I know there was some discussion about the juvenile expunction statute. And I think that it's important to contrast that statute with 973-015. Because it does explicitly refer to the court's record. And that shows a couple of things. It shows primarily that the legislature can choose very particular words when it wants to. And the other thing is that an expunged juvenile record will not show up in a PSI, because the PSI writer gets access only to court records under the juvenile records statute, not police records, not law enforcement records. And if a juvenile has been granted expunction, that court record will never show up in an adult PSI for that person. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Olson, and thank you, Ms. Burke, for your arguments this morning. That